From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on, is the Shroud of Turin authentic? Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Well, here we go again. The Department of Homeland Security now telling airlines about a potential new shoe bomb threat and urged them to pay extra attention to flights from overseas into the United States. Several officials familiar with the advisory say that very recent intelligence, considered credible, warns of possible attempts to attack passenger jets using explosives concealed in shoes. As a result, the airlines will be paying extra attention to passenger shoes on flights to the U.S. from overseas. Those passengers may also experience increased scrutiny in pat-downs and full body screening. And Homeland Security Secretary Jeff Johnson ordered the cancellation of a plan by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency to develop a national license plate tracking system after privacy advocates raised concern about the initiative. We finally win one. The order came just days after the ICE solicited proposals from companies to compile a database of license plate information from commercial and law enforcement tag readers. Officials said that the database was intended to help apprehend fugitive illegal immigrants, but the plan raised concerns that the movements of ordinary citizens, under no criminal suspicion, could be scrutinized. And the Department of Homeland Security has contracted to purchase, listen to this, 704 million rounds of ammo over the next 4 years. That's 2,500 rounds per officer. Wow. Well, in a moment, Craig Hewlett joins us. We're going to be talking about these issues and some other ones that are facing all of us right now. Ukraine's president says that he has agreed to a truce with opposition leaders after at least 26 people died in clashes this week. In a statement, he said negotiations would start to end the bloodshed of the last several days. By the way, tomorrow night, remote viewer Ed Daines, who also lives in the Ukraine and the United States, will be our guest for a couple hours talking about this case. But this brings sheds a light on just the fact that a lot of people around this planet are uptight, aren't happy. They're concerned about everything. I thought we'd bring in Howard Bloom for a moment, of course. Howard, of course, the founding member of the Epic Evolution Society and the Darwin Project. And, of course, I turn to him for these subjects when we need to talk about the human mind. Howard, are you sensing this too? Are people acting strange?
There is a radical discontent. It's showing up in Thailand. People are being killed in protests in the streets in Thailand right now. It's showing up in violent protests in Venezuela, the very same kind of thing that's happening in the streets of Kiev, in the Ukraine, in the United States. But in the United States, there is a tiny sign of hope. The president had his all-time low approval ratings in December, and he's up slightly, just slightly. He's at a 42% approval rating. Congress, which has gone as low as 8% in the Rasmussen polls, that's an 8% approval rating, George. That's a radical disapproval rating.
That's right.
Congress has gone slightly up. And the reason is that in December, after 38 years of a split Congress and Senate never being able to reach a budget deal, almost 40 years, Patty Murray, a Democrat, and Paul Ryan, a Republican, got together and actually, for the first time in nearly 40 years, hammered out a joint deal. What does that mean for you and me? It means there is a radical discontent in the disconnect between the White House and the Congress. There is a radical discontent with the continual battle in Washington in which nothing gets done and people only sling poison at each other. And this was a bit of a sign that you could rule through cooperation, that you could rule through compromise. So the figures, as low as they are in terms of content with the White House and content with the Congress, are slightly up, and there are signs of massive hope on the horizon. Google has purchased a total of 13 robotics and artificial intelligence companies and is talking about totally turning around the way that we manufacture goods and deliver them. Tesla Motors has been churning out cars using robotic techniques here in the United States, and is talking about building a giga battery factory, a huge battery factory, with two Japanese companies here in the United States, in New Mexico. There's a radical turnaround in the way that we do things. It's on the horizon. It's coming from Americans, American entrepreneurs, who are working in part with tools the government has given them, like the internet, which came from DARPA. And together they are on the brink of a revolution, and our job is to work our tails off to work better, smarter, and harder than the people in Japan, the people in Korea, the people in China, to make sure we are the leaders of that next revolution.
We will check in with you soon enough, Howard, and see if this all comes to fruition. Scientists say far too little is known about the health risks of chemicals used in food packaging, and some could cause cancer. Researchers needed, they say, to understand the effect on the human body and the embryonic development of at least 4,000 chemicals used in packaging. Links between packaging and obesity, diabetes, neurological diseases needs to be explored, according to the scientists. The beleaguered bumblebee faces a new threat now. Geez, researchers have found that two diseases harbored by honeybees are spilling over into wild bumblebees. Insects infected with the deformed wing virus and a fungal parasite were found across England, Scotland, and Wales. It'll happen here in the United States and North America, too. Coffee prices surging again as traders worry that the dry weather in Brazil will affect that country's crop and hurt supplies. And in a play to dominate messaging on phones and the web, Facebook has acquired WhatsApp for $19 billion. That's a stunning sum for a five-year-old company. But WhatsApp has been able to hold its weight against messaging heavyweights like Twitter, Google, Microsoft, Skype. WhatsApp has upwards of 450 million users, and it's adding an additional million users every day. Let's check in with investment advisor Catherine Austin Fitz. Another interesting acquisition by Facebook, Catherine.
Yeah. You know, when you got lots of cash, you can run around the world buying everybody up, George.
And I still don't see where they monetize all this. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, I think what they're trying to do is build the infrastructure that they can then monetize with the ads that they do. So, you know, can they monetize it? You know, Amazon stock is in the stratosphere, and it still hasn't made any money yet. So, you know, part of what you're watching is you're watching this infrastructure build out as everybody goes onto the mobile platform, and we're watching mobile payments start to catch up and get onto the mobile platform. So this year is going to be very dramatic in terms of how things move into that infrastructure.
I think so. And Catherine, you know, Howard Bloom was alluding to things seem to have calmed down for a little bit. Do you feel that? I don't yet.
Well, you see one part of the economy automating tremendously. And, you know, the people who are suffering as a result of the last round of automation, you know, are being left behind, and this is going to hurt them more. The latest estimate I saw was 40 to 50% of the existing jobs are going to be replaced with automation. So as I said, some places in the country are doing great. Others are really in a state of great depression. And I think the big question is, as we rebuild in America with automation, what does that mean for the person who's being left behind?
Good point. To track Catherine, Solari.com, that's her website. In a moment, Craig Hewlett joins us. We're going to be talking about those issues I just talked about and some others next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Craig Hewlett with us. Of course, he was a speechwriter and special assistant for the congressman who's retired, Jack Metcalf. He has been a consultant to federal law enforcement and Homeland Security for a number of years as well. He's a paid consultant on a number of issues. I cannot think, Craig, of a most important time to bring you on with everything that's been going on. Oh my gosh. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on. And we're constantly commenting on how fast things are moving. It's absolutely incredible. I've never worked so hard in 40 years of doing this kind of work. I'm just overwhelmed by the amount of data that's coming out and how quickly we're moving, sometimes not in a very good direction, but how fast everything is moving.
Well, you know, in little over a week, we're going to be rolling into March. This year is a quarter gone already.
Right.
It's just too fast. Anyways, I want to get your take on Homeland Security, Craig. Talking about the shoe bomb episode, we had that problem years ago, and now they're warning airlines, hey, it's going to happen again. What's going on?
Well, you know, the fear-mongering is really getting out of hand. I'm sensing from my client base and people that we talk to and doing interviews, people that call in on talk shows, people are, there's kind of a standard level of fear that everybody feels right now. And we're constantly being told that we're under attack. We're always under attack by terrorism. And yet, from all of my knowledge and my database, the terrorists, attacks that have taken place so far, most of them have had some involvement of the FBI in the sting operation. They've been directly involved mm-hmm. in it. So, you know, was it really a terrorist attack that they stopped, or were they setting people up and then arrested them when they got so far down the path of committing the act? So I'm not sure that we're being threatened in any way, shape, or form like we're being told. I think the threat is exaggerated. And it's serving this and past administrations and future administrations to militarize local law enforcement, to militarize a force equal to a standing army that operates domestically. And these can't be good things for us down the road.
No, not at all. And we see these stories where the Department of Homeland Security, they're going to buy 704 million more rounds of ammunition over the next 4 years. What are they getting ready for?
I think there's no question they're preparing to deal with the American people. They're not planning on dealing with terrorism. There is no threat of terrorism that would require a standing army here in America. Law enforcement, believe it or not, law enforcement, and I mean agencies like the ATF&E, which I have a lot of familiarity with, and the DEA, they're usually the outfits that intervene and catch actual terrorists plotting and scheming. They've got the human intelligence, the feet on the ground, and we honestly do not need Homeland Security. And I still believe it's an illegal organization. It's usurped the entire Justice Department, various different agencies that used to be independent of each other, centralizing law enforcement and the intelligence community under the President of the United States. That's never been a good idea. And nobody in ATF, Secret Service, Customs, nobody likes it. Nobody likes it at all. But everybody's just going to fall silent and allow this to continue.
Yeah, and it does. And it seems to fester and it gets larger and larger. But we did win one when the Homeland Security decides to cancel the national license plate tracking plan. Why do you think they canceled that?
I think because the states are doing so well on their own, they can get the data from the states. I live in Washington State. We've had it for a very long time. And Seattle is one of those cities that it seems to want to be on the leading edge of being invasive in citizens' rights. I'm not really sure why, but it's also a place where there's a lot of protest. So it does kind of balance out a little bit. My biggest concern is the purchase of ammo, and it isn't just Homeland Security. I just produced a paper. And it's new to our website, so anybody wants to go to my website and take a look at it, feel free to do so. It's a PDF file. But, you know, every department of the government is purchasing ammo, from the Education Department, Oceanic,
the Postal, yeah, everything.
Are purchasing ammo, guns, Glocks, and they're arming every federal agency like they're planning to do police work in an area that none of us would have even thought it would be necessary. What does the Education Department need hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition and law enforcement personnel?
It is so strange. I thought for a moment maybe they're buying all this ammo to keep it off the shelves from the American people.
Well, see, there's a lot of conspiracy theories about why they're doing that. But the truth is, I have an FFL. I don't sell to the public. Very little do I sell to the public. I design and build custom knives and guns.
Right. And good ones, I should say.
For a client base. Yeah. Some of them are pretty bizarre, but I have to admit. But I've never had any problem whatsoever finding the ammo for my client base or for training sessions that we put on. But I do know this. They've got enough ammunition to fight Iraq and Afghanistan three times over.
Absolutely. Yes.
And they're holopoid ammo. The newest purchase under Homeland Security was 308 sniper rounds. And there's absolutely no reason why they would need sniper rounds, they certainly aren't going to be for training. But I do believe that we're getting a hint through FEMA, and recently the Ohio National Guard was running an operation. There's a new YouTube video leaked where a FEMA instructor was talking to recruits, and they are looking at U.S. Christian, conservative, gun-owning Americans as a threat to the stability of the United States. That isn't a militia conspiracy theory. The Ohio National Guard actually dressed up part of their troops to look like citizen militias, built the small town, and then proceeded to assault the town and kill the militia members in a training exercise.
Craig, I want to get your perspective on what's happening around this planet as well. You know, the situation with Iran, with North Korea, these things really haven't eased yet. What do you think's happening there?
Well, I think there's a complete different strategic development that has taken over our Pentagon. Our Pentagon deployment has changed drastically. It's growing larger. The largest footprint now is in the African continent. We've got thousands of drone sites being prepared all throughout the African continent. And the view is that Africa is the new Wild West, and the first people to go in is the cavalry. That makes way for the military presence to stabilize the region for the oil companies, mining companies, you know, Monsanto, Archer Daniels, yep. Midland for arable land. They've discovered water, you know, Nestle wants to own the water in every one of those nation states on the African continent. They're buying it up right and left. Then they bottle the water and sell it back to the people of those nation states. And they now view water as more valuable than gold. And this isn't nothing new. I mean, environmentalists have warned that we were headed that way for a long time. But never has the American footprint been so large and so fast in its movement into the African continent, because they're discovering absolutely everything you can imagine, from gold, silver, chromium. Most of the strategic raw materials our Pentagon uses comes out of Africa. So the U.S. multinational corporate structure, they're viewing it, along with the rest of the Western corporate structure, that's the new Wild West. And we're sending in the military now to dominate and stabilize that region to make it safe for the corporations to do business.
Well, the British saw this a long time ago, Craig. They, you know, the British tried to take over all of that. And, of course, it didn't work for them. And that was back in the 1800s. What happened? What happened between then and now? Why are we just realizing that there's a potential gold mine out there?
Well, I think it's not so much that we're just now realizing it. I think, you know, in the past, there was one of the strategic concerns in Africa, and how you've just phrased that question brings it right to the fruition. China right now has the largest footprint economically on the African continent. Russia is right behind it. France and Great Britain are there, and they're not going to be pushed aside easily. The Pentagon is moving quickly because they're expecting a confrontation with China over these regions that China is already operating in. And China's doing something different. China goes in and builds the infrastructure. They build roads, hospitals, football stadiums, dams, entire systems of waterways. We don't do that. American interests have always, we just go in and, well, kick their ass and take their gas.
Literally.
And that's exactly what the military openly states in their own documents about our force deployment, is we are being deployed to stabilize the region for raw materials export. They openly state that that's what they're doing and why they're doing it. So, again, we're not talking about a conspiracy. We're talking about a global regime that's over and above America's interest as Americans. You and I, our interests aren't being looked at here any more than our interests under what you were discussing earlier in the show about robotics.
Is this a new world order? Basically, they're saying, all right, take over Africa. Do this, do that.
Yeah, actually, it is the New World Order language. You know, we're forced to use it because it's been used so much. But, you know, I've been reading about it. Its actual title in the elite forum is a the global regime of economic interdependence. But it's not interdependence between the American people and, say, the people of Brazil. It's between the corporations of America and their subsidiaries in Brazil.
Good point.
It's more of a relation intra-related global regime.
We'll be back more with Craig Hewlett. He's with us for 2 hours. I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, happy 50th birthday today to former Navy vet Robert Greaves. Lives in Cranston, Rhode Island, and he's all excited. Listens to Coast all the time. Happy 50, Robert. Good for you, my friend. He's been listening to us for a long, long time. And welcome back to Coast. Craig Hewlett with us. We'll take calls with Craig next hour. Craig, have you been following this Bitcoin craze?
A little bit, yeah, I have.
Pretty amazing.
I don't think it's going to be successful because I don't think the Federal Reserve or the Treasury is going to allow another form of money. They had a fit about PayPal, but they could live with it. But Bitcoin is kind of an affront to the Federal Reserve system and the world's banking system that's all basically based on the Federal Reserve system and operation. So I think there's going to be a long fight over it. I do know that some people have invested in it in a pretty big way, and a couple of nation states are looking at it as a means of transferring funds and its usage.
Yeah, so they're starting to put in some ATMs now, Bitcoin ATMs. It got up to $1,000 a coin in December. It's down to $656. Primarily because some of the Bitcoin, I guess, dealers, you would call, or exchanges, have been hacked. Mm-hmm. And, of course, who knows who arranged the hacking, right?
Well, right now, I have to tell you that I believe your earlier question about Homeland Security, what are they anticipating? I think they're anticipating a backlash here in the United States by the average citizen, and that's who they really fear the most. They're not afraid of the left or the radical right. They're not even really concerned with any exterior threat whatsoever. They're just not. And this country never has had an external threat that was really believable. But there is a threat from the United States, and it comes from the American people. And I think Homeland Security is preparing for the day when there will be a reckoning over interest rates. There will be a very possibly an outbreak of virtual revolution against the IRS. I think there's a real chance that if interest rates go up, we can see inflation and deflation at the same time, which would immediately create food shortages, and some places would be completely abandoned. I live in one of those areas where Walmart and Safeway have completely dominated the landscape for about a 200-mile radius, all of them down the West Coast. And if there were an economic collapse, food would dry up in less than 3 days. But I also know that areas like where I live, they would be abandoned. Foodstuffs wouldn't even get any further than Olympia, Washington. The whole West Coast would be affected.
No, you're right.
And I think Homeland is preparing for that.
Well, and you know, we're seeing other things happen too, other factors, which could be common denominators to all of this. You know, retail stores like JCPenney, they're in trouble. Sears, they're in trouble. Best Buy, they're in trouble. You know, the internet is crushing a lot of these other places, and also those other stores are crushing them as well. And what I think, what I'm beginning to feel is if there's this incredible tension between the haves and the have-nots. Those people who are working in this climate, this economic climate, are doing okay. They're, you know, they're making some money, they're paying their bills, they're buying their cars. But then you have that other faction, they're not doing okay. They're in trouble. And I think those are the folks who are going to say enough is enough.
Well, the latest study puts it at 93 million Americans, adults, are permanently unemployed. That's almost a third of our population.
That's way too much.
It's completely unemployable. There's no place for them in the marketplace. And these people are, when I say permanently, they're not even looking for work any longer. So how long can this economy be sustained when the remaining people that are employed, 70% work for the federal, state, or local government? So there is a have and a have-not, but the haves are beginning to become obvious to everybody, that is those that work for federal, state, and local government. Those are the ones that are getting good wages, pay raises, and their wages are adjusted to inflation. A lot of them have their own efficiency. It's the other part of our country, the 25% of, call them the us, the U.S., that are getting burned and overtaxed, and frankly, they're not making it. The truth is they're not making it. Most American families are living hand in glove, month to month, paycheck to paycheck. Not making it.
If that, going into debt a little bit more each year. What's the spark, Craig? What do you think the spark will be that ignites all of this?
I wish I didn't have to say this. I think it's going to be the minute America, as America, decides to abandon our sovereignty as a nation state and completely give over everything that matters, all the things that matter in the economy, the financial world, employment, you know, war, peace. These things will be given over to the global regime of the multinational corporations that already exist, which is what we refer to as an empire. But we wrongly attributed it to an American empire. It has nothing to do with America. No. If it was an American empire, like Noam Chomsky phrases it, or the progressive left calls it, if you think it's an American empire, you have to ask yourself, then you're saying it's like Rome. Well, the Roman people benefited from the Roman Empire. The American people are being destabilized by this regime in place because it has no interest in the United States as a nation state any longer. The money is elsewhere. The Wild West is the African continent. The place to sell and buy and produce goods and services are anywhere but here.
I'm amazed when I see stories like Facebook buying a minimally profit company like WhatsApp for $19 billion. We're talking General Motors, Exxon kind of money. And this is like made out of thin air.
Well, nobody anticipated, 35, 40 years ago, nobody anticipated the American regime would abandon its nation state's people for a global regime and literally dissolve the sovereignty economically, financially, of you and I here in the United States. They don't care because Samuel P. Huntington calls them gold collar workers. They don't have any interest in the United States as the United States.
No, because they're taken care of. Most of their homes are in other countries. They don't have to worry about us.
That's correct. And I get in trouble all the time when I say, you know, you think McDonald's is an American firm, but 80% of all the McDonald's operating in the world today are not in America. 80% of them are elsewhere.
That's right.
So you're not talking about even branded items like General Motors and Boeing. They're not interested in what happens domestically here anymore. Boeing fully plans in the long run to end up making planes in China. They'll move their headquarters into Germany, maybe to Bahrain, the way Halliburton did. They are abandoning America because our sovereignty gets in the way of the multinational corporate structure. They can go everywhere in the world, which is exactly what they're doing with the trade agreements. They go all over the world, and they make trade agreements that would not be allowed to be made here in America on domestic soil.
Well,
they can operate fundamentally what I would call free up.
I'm convinced what they're looking at America for is the military might. So all these other nations that they put together in this group will have their own little strengths, and our job will be the policers of all of this, won't it?
And actually, another disturbing thing that I have to bring out all the time now is 60% of our military, all the new recruits, 60% are from foreign countries. They would otherwise be illegal aliens. They join the military, the U.S. military, to try to gain citizenship. So the American military isn't anything like what you think it is, and they don't have a problem. You know, we don't bring the troops home when they get killed in Afghanistan and Iraq, and some of these troops have done 9 tours back-to-back in these two countries. They'll continue being doing tours in the African continent over and over again because, by and large, they're not the Americans you and I would recognize. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with, you know, a Mexican kid joining the U.S. military to try to become a U.S. citizen. But the fact is, they're not interested in recruiting Americans if they can enlist people from foreign countries and basically use them up. if it were American youths dying in large numbers, and it was affecting moms and dads here in America on American soil, it'd be a lot harder to fight a 14-year war.
But, yeah, well, that's a good point.
The losses you're taking, the casualties, the bodies are shipped back to Mexico, Tijuana, Panama, Bosnia, Thailand. Then the American people don't even really, we're not really affected by what the global regime is doing in our name.
Can so you believe it's been that long? Oh, my God. Let's see. We went into Iraq in 2003. That's right. And, of course, the Desert Storm, the first war, 1991, wasn't it?
Correct.
I think so. That's right. That's when I retired from the Navy, 2 months before we went into Iraq and Desert Storm. But Afghanistan, we went in 2001, right after 9/11 in October, if I remember. And we're still there.
And we're still there. Yes,
some
of our troops have done 9 tours.
It's longer than Vietnam now, isn't it?
It's longer than Vietnam. It is our longest war. It's also cost this country $6 trillion.
And what have we gotten out of it?
Well, we protect the poppy fields, so we've got a heroin industry here in America. It's the largest upturn of heroin production in Africa.
Well, all right, let's go back for a little bit now. Let's assume all that's correct. I think you're right. So the Taliban, as horrible as they were to a lot of people, the Taliban just about wiped out the poppy seed and the heroin production.
They, in fact, did.
Okay.
According to the United Nations, they were producing zero poppy and heroin.
Right.
Coming out
I mean, they had their atrocities, women's rights and everything. They were bad at all that, but they did wipe out the drug trade out of Afghanistan. We come in, and what happens? It flourishes. Who pushes that? Karzai, who's doing this?
I've got 50 photos in a file on my website of U.S. military personnel guarding poppy fields. Guarding the poppy fields. I mean, entire platoon.
Are they mercenaries?
With full body armor, with light artillery weapons. They're armed to the teeth to protect the poppy fields because they don't want the Taliban to come. See, if it's a poppy field under the Karzai regime, and they're considered loyal poppy growers to the Karzai American puppet regime, we protect the poppy fields from the Taliban to coming in and taking the poppies for their own use.
Huh.
So we're protecting the trade, in a sense, because that's our heroin.
And who markets it? Who sells it? Goes through the CIA?
Yes. Unfortunately, more and more evidence is coming to the forefront that the CIA has never not been involved in drug trafficking. It goes back to even before Vietnam. Because it's the same as a currency. It is a currency.
It's huge.
It's a form of currency.
And it's unrecorded.
Nobody really wants it to end.
And it's unrecorded currency.
And
cash
money.
And you get the cash, and they probably have some favorite banks that they're working through. And
we know which banks. They've been indicted.
They've been indicted. And they paid their fees.
Caught, they get a slap of a couple of million dollars in fines. That's it.
Or even a billion. It's nothing to them.
It's nothing to them. But are we directly involved in the drug trafficking? You can't stop the stories in the foreign press. And the foreign press reports when they discover that our DEA is in bed with a Mexican drug cartel, protecting one cartel to the disadvantage of other drug cartels. When our own federal law enforcement is directly involved in seeing that cartel continues to produce and traffic drugs into America, look, I could probably be as Machiavellian as the next guy if I was in government, but there is a point where the American citizen has to look at their own government and go, you know what, that's not my government any longer.
Is it so far-fetched, Greg, that it's almost unbelievable?
Well, when 100 million people are unemployed in America, I doubt that they're sitting around scouring guys like my website to find out the truth about what's going on in their government.
They've got enough problems.
I think the disinterest in what matters in this country is at an all. I know it's at an all-time high. My phone doesn't ring, George. It doesn't. I'll do 18 hours of radio interviews in the next few days, all over the world, all in nations, all in the different states, all over the country. I'll do interviews. My phone doesn't ring.
Huh.
By and large, the American people are not interested. You've captured a certain audience, and you've taught them that these things matter. But by and large, talk shows today, the news outlets, the entertainment industry, nobody is really interested in the truth about what's going on in the government. You know, I can't match the ratings on an MTV weekend.
No, not at all. And it's afoot, I think, to people putting their head in the sand and not looking up. I mean, they are captured by sporting events, social networking, and, you know, just trying to forget this stuff. That they don't want anything to do with it. It's easier for them. Maybe it's less painful for them to try to pretend that it's not happening, that it doesn't exist.
I think it is scary for them.
It is.
To be honest with you. For some reason, I'm immune to that kind of a thing.
Well, like,
and I've been doing it for so long. I'm kind of, I don't know how, well, I've been bruised by it for so long that I don't have any feelings about it. I understand that we're losing the country. We're losing the Bill of Rights. We're losing America as America. You could even go so far as to say it's over.
Well, look at Afghanistan for a moment. You brought it up. We've been there now 13 years. If you don't have a friend who's over there overseas or a loved one who's been over there or someone who has died, you're not affected by that anymore. The media really isn't reporting on it like it did during the 2001 to 2003 era. So for most people, Craig, Afghanistan and Iraq doesn't exist anymore. It's gone. I mean, people are out of sight, out of mind. And it is probably one of the strangest phenomenons I've ever seen where you literally are in a war and it's like it doesn't exist.
It's because the draft doesn't exist. Believe me, they would be interested if there was a draft and every single young man and young woman between the ages of 18 and 35 had to do 2 to 3 years in the U.S.
Well, maybe that's why they don't have a draft. Because
that's why they don't have a draft.
You know, they don't want us to say, hey, enough is enough. We had the draft during the Vietnam era, and look what happened to that war. It came crushing down pretty darn fast once people got drafted, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And in fact, Westmoreland, who was, I hate using the word friend with people like that, but I worked with him at length doing interviews about war and peace and the logistics of war. He was a guest with me on a regular basis and during interviews. And he told me, and I finally got him to tell the audiences when we went on the air, that the draft army was the finest fighting machine he'd ever witnessed, because it drafted from a broad base of the culture, and we had PhDs and master's degrees as platoon sergeants.
Yeah.
And the officers were a highly educated group. But the draft army was the finest army he'd ever witnessed, fielded, that he was in command of. When they went all volunteer, I can tell you, an entry-level job prospect joining the military, you know, I'm not going to knock the military because I love those guys. They're the ones out there dying for the perceived cause of liberty here in America.
You're here.
But you're not going to get the top of the line.
No, not under that situation.
Wall Street.
No, you're not going to get a guy who just gets out of college, has a job offer to be a lawyer, let's say. He's not going to enlist in the military. It's not going to happen.
No, and that's why 60% are being recruited from foreign countries. Americans don't even know that we have recruiting offices in Thailand, Kosovo, Panama City. We're recruiting in foreign lands to get people in the military other than Americans. They don't want Americans, because then it would be Americans that would revolt and come out against the wars that we're fighting. That are, in many cases, illegal wars. They are illegal.
Craig, I want you to look into your crystal ball. We're going to come back in just a moment. We're going to take phone calls with you with your final hour with us. But I want you to look into this crystal ball and tell us what you think this country looks like in 5 to 10 years. We'll be back in a moment. Craig Hewlett with us. Phone lines are open. We'll take your calls when we come right back. I'm George Norrie, and of course, you're listening worldwide to Coast AM.